Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Fox Nomad Podcast. I'm your host, Fox Nomad Anil Pawat. I've got a fantastic episode for you today. My next two guests have traveled the world on bicycle. So they are the couple behind Amazing World Bike Tour. That's Arev and Mateas. They make some fantastic YouTube videos about the places they've been. For those of you who've listened to the podcast or have followed me for any length of time, you know that one of the major reasons that I started traveling was because I read Long Way Round and I watched the documentary Long Way Round. So this episode really is just sort of near and dear to my heart. It's really just one of those kind of trips that I really love hearing about. And I think you're really going to enjoy this episode with Amazing World Bike Tour. Thank you both for joining the podcast and working with me on the schedule. I know you were traveling, I'm traveling, so I'm really glad that we were able to get together to be able to record this. So thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast.
Thank you.
I want to hear about your travels. I mean, you have this kind of big adventure planned or ongoing, and it's a bike trip around the world. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. So that was the idea, that we cycle around the world. And obviously with a bicycle, we are quite slow. So all the world is relative. But we soon figured out that we at least want to cycle from Germany to Korea. That was kind of the minimal goal, because I'm from Germany. We met in Germany. I was originally from Armenia. And my mother is from Korea. So to connect all this with a bicycle, that was the main goal.
And I mean, are you cyclists or were you, why bikes, I guess, is that?
No, we both of us are not cyclists or also not very sporty people, but yeah, we like cycling. It's a fun way of traveling. And when we wanted to, so when the idea came that we want to travel for longer periods, Matthias came with this idea, why not cycling? And of course, in the beginning, I was a little bit surprised, and it took me a while to agree on that, but because cycling, as Matthias already told, we are slower, and so I was like, oh, it will take a lot of time until we get to Korea.
And you were not the most confident of cyclists.
No.
So I grew up in Germany. I'm born in Germany, grew up here. So in Germany, it's absolutely normal that you start learning to cycle in elementary school. And if I remember correctly, in third or fourth grade, we had this kind of cycling license where a real policeman would go on a training area with the signs and everything, and then we would get kind of a paper cycling license. But Arif learned to cycle when she was already over 20 years old.
Yes. Yeah, so like properly. So I tried as a kid, but I wasn't successful. So I just left it. And then I would never imagine that I would cycle for so many kilometers in the world. And so it took me a while, but I was actually happy to do that because, yeah, I really enjoyed cycling after all.
Yeah, and to get back to your question, because so I cycled all my life casually. Well, how to say? I cycled all my life to get to places, to get to school, later to get to university, to get to my work if it's close enough, but never for fun, never ever for fun. And so I think there's the question, why did we decide to cycle around the world when we are not these big cyclists? And that is because I have a friend from school, and he cycled also a very long distance from Germany to basically to Central Asia. And there he had to stop his trip because he got sick and everything. But so this was in the back of my mind, that it's technically possible to do a big trip with a bicycle, even though we had never done anything like that. And we always wanted to travel Aro wanted to see Southeast Asia as well, and I every year said I don't want to fly there for just 2 weeks. That doesn't make sense in my mind. And then I said, okay, one day we'll do a longer journey. We saved all these years. We saved as much as we could. And then when the opportunity arose, I said, how about we do it with a bicycle?
And what is the logistics of planning a trip like this? So, I mean, I think most of us are familiar with, you're flying to a country, you check your passport, do you need a visa, and you get on the plane. It's pretty straightforward. But with a bike, you now have a bike, and if you're crossing borders, how does that work? How did the planning go into such a trip?
Do you want to
Mm.
fly?
Yeah, I mean, we
I think there's different approaches, very different approaches. There's very different extremes. I think we are somewhere in the middle because so we've been going for a couple of years now, and we've met people on any approach. And the one extreme is that they have a very specific, very short time frame, and they want to cycle a very specific route, and then they planned exactly where they go, and they have the maps and then the routes already on their GPS device, and then they just hammer down the road every day. So that's one extreme, and if you want to do a world record, this is probably the way to go. But we are more to the other end, where it's more loosely. So the preparation is more like to be set up for anything that this journey can throw in your path. And so we started out with thinking what kind of bicycles would we want to ride, and then we soon figured, because we don't know which countries exactly we would choose, and which roads, and how the condition of the roads is and everything, so we decided to go with very, very sturdy, very simple bicycles. And they served us really well, actually.
Yeah.
Stuff like this, then.
And then you pack for all seasons. So you have clothes for summer, winter, rain clothing. Yeah, you have your tent and kitchen and bathroom.
And with the border crossings, we did kind of on the go. What we did, or what I did, I begged Arif to change her passport to a German passport before the trip. So that we have the same passport to make it a little bit more straightforward, and we don't need to go through two different processes every time we change the country. And I think that was a good idea. And then with the German passport, a lot of the countries give visa-free entry or visa exemptions, stuff like this. So the first visa that we really needed was Iran. And then we had some troubles with countries like Turkmenistan, which is notorious for not being the easiest to get the visa. And then back then we also struggled to get into China, and later we managed that. So but that we would just go on do on the fly, basically. Not on the fly, on the something, basically.
Yeah. And is there a particular bike that you landed on? Did you both have the same brand and model of bike? Did you choose different bikes? I'm curious what the gear looked like there, helmets and that kind of thing.
So we decided to go with kind of old school bike touring bicycles, and what they're very similar to the steel mountain bikes from the 90s, just so that they're a little more sturdy and that they have longer chain stays, so that with the panniers in the back that you don't hit your feet on the backs with every time you turn the pedal. So basically they're just a little longer stretched out. And with a very upright riding position. And no, they're not the same, but they're very similar technically. So for Arif, I bought a bicycle that's probably now 20 years old from a company that's even not
Doesn't
in
exist.
business anymore. And I changed all the parts when I got it into what I wanted it to be. And my bike is, yeah, maybe around 10 years now, from a German company. But basically, they're very simple. So it's this derailleur system with three chain rings in the front, and basically 3x9 Shimano. So we have 27 gears with the chain. So nothing new and fancy. We don't even have disc brakes. We have rim brakes, like the simplest stuff that you can think of, so that we can repair it more easily in countries that don't have access to very fancy stuff.
Yeah, it makes sense that you would go for something that's more durable as opposed to for speed or something like that. Because like you said, if you get the newest, the most complicated bike and it needs a very specific screw or something and you're in Turkmenistan, you might not be able to find it easily or at all. So I'm guessing like on this route, right, through the European Union, border crossings probably were pretty easy, I'm assuming.
Non-existent.
Yeah. And then you hit the Turkish border, right? Is that that's the route? And so this is the first time you're showing up on bikes now from Bulgaria, right? Crossing the border from there?
Okay. No, from Greece. We came with a ferry. Yeah.
Okay. So does anybody, like when you make that crossing, that seems like a pretty standard crossing except for maybe the bikes, right? So did you get any questions or like how long are you going to stay? What is the answer to some of those that they might ask you?
Well, they look surprised sometimes and then they want to check our bikes because they're, what is it that we carry? And yeah, then they open sometimes to see what we have. And most of the time we were really lucky or we met really nice people. And so they were like, oh, it's fine, just go.
Yeah, actually, I think we were more excited than them. For us, it was a big thing to leave the European Union. We were really looking forward to get this bigger change into Turkey. And so we took a ferry from Athens to a small island, Chios, which is close, not far from Izmir. And then from there, you need to take another boat to get to Turkey. So we arrived with maybe 100 people. Obviously, we are the only ones with bicycles. And it was funny because I was like, oh no, please don't, that they don't make us, you know, take off all the bags and put everything through the scanner and stuff, because that's kind of, I mean, it's not a massive deal, but it's kind of a hassle. And then when the border guard saw us, or not the border guard, but the guy standing with the scanner machine with the X-ray, he sees us, he sees the queue behind us, and he's just like, okay, just go. So that was our first bigger border, or real border crossing.
But we really almost never had a trouble crossing any border. People are excited to see us and surprised, but also positively surprised. Oh, what are you guys doing here with your bicycles?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess they don't, it's not very common, I'm assuming. It's not like they were like, hey, we just saw some people on bikes last week or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
It depends.
Somewhere, yeah.
Because, I mean, in many countries, of course, like in Europe, nobody really notices you when you're cycling with a lot of bags on a bicycle. So people see this every day and it's just not something to turn their head. But in Turkey, it really started, I think, that people noticed us because it's just, out of the ordinary. And then people get excited and ask questions, where you're coming from, where you're going, why are you here? because with the bicycles, we go through regions where nobody really visits most of the time, right? Like normal, like, let's say, average tourists. They travel from the hotspots to the hotspots in a country. So they're not really seen in between, but we spend 95% or more of our time in between those places. And that's really cool. And the borders, it gets funneled through these few border crossings a lot of the time, right? When you go from Turkey to Georgia, it's like three border crossings. When you go from Georgia to Armenia, there's also, I believe, three border crossings that's possible. But then from Armenia into Iran is just one border crossing, just one. So of course there, the border officers, they know that cyclists come because we are not the only people who do that, right?
And are you using GPS like on the way, or do you look at the route every day? Is it kind of like, or do you have it mapped out all from the beginning? Or is it more of a day to day?
Well, we have offline maps, but yeah, it's a day to day thing. So we plan every day. We will go approximately in this direction, and then we'll see where we will stop, where we will end up putting our tent for the day. But we have an approximate direction for the day and for the month.
Yeah. So oftentimes we have a general idea for bigger countries, especially like Turkey, for instance. It was, I mean, going from west to east, that's like 2,000 kilometers or more. So we knew we need to think about how much time do we need for this? How much time do we actually have? So we have a general route that we plan before, but then we deviate almost every day.
Yeah.
So
and then we have like ideas. Maybe this city in, I don't know, 400 kilometers, and there in 1,000 kilometers. So yeah.
And then do you deviate, you know, if you see a sign or somebody recommends a place to visit or somewhere to eat, did you have flexibility in the schedule, or it seems like you had planned it that way so that you had some, it wasn't a race, right? You're not to try to break a record.
Yeah, exactly. And also that's why we loved cycling, because we have the flexibility and freedom to stop and, I don't know, go somewhere where locals recommend, or a lot of the time people just invited us over to their place or wanted to spend time with us. And for us, it was also an important experience to make. And yeah, we would stop and change the plans. Yeah.
Sometimes you would spend up to a week with random people that just invited us in from the road, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, then if you plan too much, you struggle a lot because you will not never be able to stick to the plan. So we learned early in the journey that we shouldn't plan as much, because then we feel bad if we don't hit the targets that we set before. And so better, like I would say, don't plan too much.
And is there a moment or a couple of moments that stand out to you where somebody invited you for dinner, or maybe gave you a recommendation? Just one of those moments that you wouldn't have had if you had flown to the place, or, you know, if you weren't on bikes?
Thousands.
So many. Yeah, so many. And almost every country we visited, we had these moments that we wouldn't have if we weren't cycling.
Yeah,
Our
every day, yeah.
Every day, yeah. It's I think a lot has to do with the mindset and the priorities you choose. And we said we want to travel and experience country and people and cultures. And we don't have to be fast. We don't have to plan and get somewhere, but we want to be there and feel the place, see the people. And we experience the best places and people in between the places, as Matthias already said, in the villages, on the roads. Yeah, really in the middle of nowhere, or, you know, people would call it somewhere nowhere, like nobody would think of going there when you just visit a country. But yeah, but that's where people live, and that's where you get to know their authentic life. And I think that was very valuable for us. And that's what made for me our journey so special.
Yeah. And to give a little example, it's like, I remember this one day that was also in Turkey. Like in Turkey, we had a lot of firsts because Turkish people are very hospitable anyways. And then also we are more of a curiosity as well. And it's such a big country where in the center of the country where we cycle through, they don't see people like us many times. And then it was also the first time where the language barrier was a little more noticeable, because not many people can speak English. I mean, there's a few people that speak German, actually, because maybe they had worked in Germany before, but most people generally don't. And I remember this one day we were cycling through the middle of nowhere almost, and I was hungry. Of course, we're always hungry, and there was no food. And then we hear the mosque, and then we go to the mosque, but there's no village where the mosque was. It's like, this is kind of weird. And then we cycle a little further, and then there was actually a village with another mosque, and we bought some, I think, a watermelon or some kind of melon from a fruit vendor, and we were super tired. It was super hot, and then this old man who saw us, he was also riding his super old bicycle through the village. I think he just visited the mosque, and he sees us, and he's just like, come, 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 just waving his hands, basically. So we were not really talking, but so he made us follow him, and then he invited us to his home, and then his wife prepared some lunch for us, and he told me to lay down on the couch on the veranda, and to have a, like, it was so beautiful. And like, moments like this we have most days, really.
It's so interesting that people can just see that you are tired, and they want to comfort you, give you, you know, we could definitely also stay there if we wanted and sleep and continue the next day. But yeah, but yeah, that he was like, just eat and sleep and rest.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think when people hear about this trip, some people, they probably think it's dangerous, right? So especially when they hear, you know, Iran or Central Asia, and you know, or these places. You know, it's nice to hear that over and over and over you had these positive experiences, that you had people that were friendly and curious, inviting you. I mean, you must have been very tired that day if he was saying you need to lay down. I guess when you meet that many people from that many different places, is there something that you take away from each place, or something that you changes how you look at, I guess, those cultures or just people in general?
Those are serious questions.
That's a very serious question.
But, I can say one thing, that from Greece to Turkey and Iran and up to Japan that we cycled, everywhere where we felt a little bit tired or sick or we needed some help, people there were there for us. And I can say that there is something universal about humans, that no matter from where you are, which culture, which country, which religion, people, are good in their hearts, and they want to, they want to help. And
even in, not only in Greece, like, I think it started in Germany already. If you show that you're vulnerable, and I mean, we traveling on the bicycle, sleeping in a tent in random places, and most of the time, like, we are very vulnerable, right? Like, even in traffic, like, we don't have a car that protects us from traffic and the weather and everything. And like, when we look like we need help, we got help anywhere in the world, really. And that was an amazing realization.
We didn't have to wait for a long time. So it really, the help arrived quickly. And also that people are hospitable in Germany, in France, in Switzerland, in Asia, in really everywhere, wherever we've been to. People were kind to us. So this is what I take, what I took for me.
And another big one, I would say, is that, like, we've been in the homes of so many people, And the first time that happened was like that we actually were in a house of a random person that just invited us into his house. That also happened in Turkey for the first time. And it was this very lovely old man. He was long retired, and it turned out that he had extremely different views on the world and on life and morals and religion. Like everything, he was like almost opposed in his views to us, but that didn't matter to him, right? And this was one of then following many, many experience that made us realize that people everywhere in the world, they want to do good. Like they want to live a good life. They want to be good people, and they do it based on what they believe to be how it should be,
The
right? And that
best
can
way.
be very different depending on which culture you grow up and what's the society around you. That can be very drastically, and a lot of the time, like we couldn't live there. We noticed like it was amazing, like this whole journey is like to explore these cultures, to see how different they are, to understand, to begin to understand why that is. But we also realized that we can enjoy it because we are just visiting, right? That it would be very difficult for us probably to live there. But in any case, people want to do good, yeah.
Yeah, I find that as well, that the more I travel, it's like you said, people are, seems like most people are trying to be good and do the right thing, but how they get there or how they think they should get there varies quite a bit, I think. But there are some things, like you said, that are just universal, that don't block these kind of interactions. I'm curious though, you mentioned the tents, and I just imagine along the way, are they're probably not campgrounds every time you stop. How did you plan where to stop and set up a tent? How does that work?
The easy answer is when we get tired and it's getting dark. We're like, okay, we need to look around and see where we can put our tent.
But that was a big change. I mean, like, so we both had no experience in wild camping because obviously, like, our journey several years without income, we knew we need to travel very, very low budget. And to go on a campground and pay whatever it is just for a couple of hours is not feasible. Like, on this, like, for us, it wasn't feasible. So we did that in Germany. When we started in the beginning, also Germany has very strict rules on camping just somewhere.
Wild
Like, and also
camping.
German people tend to be, like they like to follow rules. So we didn't, and we didn't feel comfortable, so we didn't do it. But then when we continued into France, I was terrified the first night and also like the first weeks. I was really scared, like, or concerned, let's say, like where do we put the tent? And yeah, that was interesting, and that led to conflicts. And now, over time, obviously we got more and more comfortable. Like with all this positive experience, like you put the tent, you sleep well, nothing gets stolen. In the morning you wake up, somebody might walk their dog past you, and then they just wave and smile at you or something like this. Or sometimes people gave us a coffee in the morning, or like, so there's all these experience that you do. And of course, sometimes there's a negative one that we learn from, like putting the tent next to a gas station on a highway,
Did we
and then
have?
we didn't sleep,
Oh yeah,
you
because
know?
it was loud. Yeah, but it was not like we didn't have
Yeah, then you
negative.
learn, okay.
Yeah, the trucks were passing by, and
So you mentioned the conflict. Was it like with police, or was it between you trying to decide where to stop and
No, between us.
okay.
No, between us, I guess, because in the beginning, Matthias was more concerned about the place, and I was. It's not that I had more experience, it's just because we also have different characters, and I'm more I feel more comfortable just with talking to people and saying, hey, I want to put my tent here, and I'm okay with people knowing that I am here camping. And in the beginning, Matthias was a little bit concerned, and he was like, no, we need to find a place where nobody sees us. And so we have different sense of security, and but I think it
Well,
got so much better during the journey. And
and now I think now, especially me,
I think
because
you are
mostly me,
better than me.
yeah, I'm really good at spotting places that would be a great camp for the night. And of course, it really depends on where you are, because in some countries, like in Central Asia, especially, where there's not a lot of people but a lot of space, you can literally put your tent wherever you want, right? You just want some flat ground and maybe not too close to the road, but it's very, very easy to find a lot of the time. And yeah, that's very different in other countries. But in Thailand, for example, we learned very quickly that we can just pull up to a temple, and there's, I think, what was it, like 30,000 temples or something are in Thailand. So every village had at least one beautiful Buddhist temple. And then we would just pull in an hour before sunset and find the next monk and ask politely, like with sign language, like, can we sleep here? We have a tent one night, tomorrow we go. Stuff like this. And they would always just smile and point us in a direction where we could put our tent for the night. So it was different. But yeah, with time, we got a lot of confidence.
And do you tie the bikes up? You know, my brain is, I'm thinking more on the, like, because I haven't done it. I've
Safety.
to say, yeah, like, do you tie the bikes up? Are your bags all in the tent? How does it work?
Well, it depends on where we are camping at the moment. And I would say one thing to this, that during the journey, you develop a feeling, you know, about the place, and you know, oh, do I need to I don't know, secure the bikes or no? So you kind of feel it. And sometimes we did secure the bikes and took the bags inside the tent, but sometimes we also just left them outside because we were sure that there is just nobody around, and
Or even people are
or
around. Like
people
in
are
Thailand, in the
nearby.
temples, we would just not secure anything
Yeah,
because
because
we knew nobody would ever dare to touch someone's stuff in the temple.
they wouldn't.
Right.
And so yeah, some it depends really. Also, sometimes it's not just the safety. Also, when it's raining, if it's raining, then we would just take the bags inside. And yeah.
What about wildlife? I mean, did you, when you're out alone, do you see different animals or different, I don't know, do you, both good and bad, like snakes, rats, mice? I'm not sure.
Yeah. You can answer this one. We
So,
talked about
I mean, it started with, so Arif grew up in a big city in Yerevan in Armenia. So she was terrified of insects. So in the beginning, she would search with a flashlight the tent for like 30 minutes to make sure that nothing
it.
as tiny as it might be is in the tent.
I just don't like this because it's like you are a city person.
Well, but that's what it is, right? So a lot of those, of course, we saw snakes, but not many. I would say more often than not, they were dead because, like, roadkill, right? I
Scorpions.
remember we saw one early on in Turkey, and we were on a small country road, just two lanes, no traffic at all, and like high green like bushes on both sides. And then I hear Arif yelling. I turn the head to the front, and I just see, like, for a split second, I see the snake flying over the last meter of the road into the greenery. So that was a little bit concerning
Between the wheels.
because it was so quick, and I had never seen a snake going so quickly. But I think that night we were hosted by warm shower hosts, so we
Maybe.
were not camping that night, so
Yeah.
that was not so concerning. I think like the biggest animals that we had next to the tent were wild boars. That happened a couple of times. Then of course cows and stuff, but they're domesticated animals, so it's not scary at all. We had sometimes something like, I think in Iran in the desert there were something, could be coyote or something like that. I'm not sure, but they were lurking around
And howling.
in the bushes.
So on those kind of nights, do you get good sleep then, or are you just awake the whole night? How does that, or do you just get used to it, you know?
Well, it depends. But for example, when we had once this that a wild boar was really close to the tent, and we would, you hear that sound that it's touching the tent or sniffing around, and so of course you don't sleep at this moment.
Don't know how big it is. You're in the tent, right? And
Yeah.
that was a little bit scary. But in general, I would say we slept well. I slept the last few years, I slept better than ever before, just because we're so tired. It's very physical, obviously. So I could, like, we do our evening routine, we do some dinner and stuff, and then we make it into our bed. And oftentimes, like, you try to write something and you actually kept a diary, like, but very short, because it's so, you're so tired. And then I would
Yeah,
just
but
go into a coma more or less, and then wake up when the sun is starting to heat up the tent in the morning.
yeah, no, that actually brings me to a question I had, which was, during this journey or these long bike trips, how does your body respond to that? How does it change? I mean, this is like a huge amount of activity. Is there like does how do you adapt to that? Are you just sore and tired all the time? Do you get used to it? Is there something that happened that maybe you didn't expect? You know, maybe it was easier than you thought, or more difficult.
Well, I think the first 2 weeks are more difficult, and everything is hurting, and yeah, you have back pain and yeah,
Pain, a lot
butt
of
pain, and yeah. But then after 2 weeks, I think for you as well, no?
yeah.
2 weeks we say is a good time. After 2 weeks, you get used to it, and then it's fine. And then, of course, it depends on where you cycle. Is it flat, or are you in the mountains, on gravel, or yeah? So it can really get hard, but then you develop muscles, and yeah, it gets easier.
And how does the packing work? So, I mean, you mentioned the roads, the rain, sun, heat. So how do you prepare for all of the elements, and how much gear do you have, in terms of capacity? My general rule for packing is most people don't need more than what they would need for a week of traveling. But I don't know if that holds true if you're going by bike and you need do you need a winter jacket, summer light jacket, rain, all that stuff?
Yeah. So with bike touring, if you go on very long journeys like us, we were prepared for anything from super hot to minus 10 degrees. And because it's, and that's also something that we learned in many countries, it's very difficult to almost impossible to ship your equipment from that country to another country. Sometimes that's just not possible, or even if it's possible, it's super, super expensive. So we tried to pack really light, and I think we did a good job. But because our bikes are super heavy, like, they weigh about 20 kilograms just without anything on them. And then with the bags, I think in the beginning, was it,
45.
I think, almost another 30 kilograms per person. So almost 50 kilograms, the bicycle would be loaded. And clothing wise, we do the onion system. So when it's really cold, we just need to put on everything we have. So I remember the nights in the Pamir Highway in Tajikistan. We had two nights at about 4,200 meters altitude, and I was in, I think, end of like middle of August or end of August or something. So it's really hot actually, but at that elevation in the night, it was below minus 10 degrees, and in the sleeping bag that was fine. But if you need to get out at night to take a little wee or something, it's really cool, very refreshing. But obviously, like the night sky makes up for that too. But yeah, this is how we try to minimize. Like we had, I think, three pairs of socks, two or three pairs of
T-shirts,
undies.
long sleeve, another long sleeve, a jacket, fleece jacket, a raincoat. So
That's
then.
pretty much it. And then some gloves and a wool hat. Yeah.
Is there anything that you just ditched right away? You said we definitely don't need this after a couple of weeks. You said we didn't need that, or something maybe that was like a lifesaver that you absolutely were like, I'm really glad we brought this.
Like we had a lot of discussions about this. We have in many things we are very different persons, and we have very different approaches to many, many things. So that was a constant potential for a little struggle between us. But I think on day two or day three we decided to send home some things, and among those I remember were like we started with two cups and two little bowls, and we sent home one of
One of
each.
each, yeah.
Because why would you carry two cups when you can just share the cup, right? So stuff like this.
And the chair, we had two
Oh, we had two
chairs,
chairs. Oh,
and
and that was a
one.
mistake, actually, I think. And
Yeah, but then again, it was really heavy, and so, and I, yeah. So we decided to use one chair.
no, yeah, I love hearing, people's efficiency plans, when packing. Most of the time, like, I don't know if you'll agree, but you always say, why did I bring this rather than I wish I had that when you're packing? I think that's more common where you're like, why did I, this thing is, and when you're on a bike, it's like that added weight probably makes a huge difference. I mean,
Not as much as if you're hiking or something, of course, because like especially when you're going flat, it doesn't really matter or not as much how heavy the bicycle is. When you're going through the mountains, of course it does.
makes a lot of difference.
But we are heavy anyways. Like if you go on this very long journey with the bicycles and you're not going through rather developed countries and you don't have a very good credit card with a lot of cash in the bag, then you're just heavy, right? And also because we're doing the videos for YouTube, we carried I think like 15 kilograms of electronics that didn't help. I think if we would take them out we would be fairly light for what we did, but with those like camera, drone, GoPro, a lot of batteries, chargers, so on and so much.
But one thing was the pharmacy, so I had an extra bag for pharmacy, first aid kit and everything. And Matthias like, why do we need so much pharmacy? So, but I was like, okay, it's nice
Bandaging stuff.
bandaging.
We could. I always used to joke. Monty Python's the Knights of the Coconut or something. I don't know the title. I only know it in German. But anyways, like I always joked. Okay, we could have a horrible accident, lose a leg or something, and then bandage everything, and then continue cycling, have another accident, and bandage us again and again on the same day without refilling. So we needed none of this, and of course, this is great. That we made it all that way. Like.
But I'm still happy that we had it, because I was confident, okay, if anything happens, we have enough medicine and bandages, and it's better to have it and not to use it than to need it, and then in the middle of nowhere, then you don't have anything and you can't help yourselves. So I was, even though you don't agree, I was happy that we had
But it
the
seems
first
like,
aid kit.
yeah, no, it seems like your planning styles kind of overlap in good ways. In other words, there's maybe more caution on one thing, but less caution on the other. But there's this overlap, so where you're prepared, in either, you know, in either situation. It's good because you're also biking for that many days, right? You need to kind of be in sync, you know, and to maybe also it helps there are two of you to think about something you might have missed if you were doing it alone, right? Like something you may not have thought about, or you know, like the first aid kit, you know, even though you didn't use it, which is great. It's that's obviously how you want to do it. But you bring up gear, and I have two questions. One, did you have a GPS, like a Garmin inReach type of device?
We didn't have a dedicated GPS. We just used our phones for that little navigation that we did. And I think that's sufficient. I think it's more efficient, like energy use wise, if you have a dedicated GPS. But since like we brought a solar panel and two power banks, and then like I mean that you are out of civilization, that you don't have any chance to recharge on a wall plug at all for several days, that's really rarely the case, the way that we travel, because we are bound to roads, and then eventually you will hit a gas station or a cafe or anything, right?
And
So
also the solar panel helped us a lot. So
yeah.
even if we didn't have meet anyone or any house or cafe for several days, we still had the solar panel and we could recharge our phones.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because in many countries those are actually banned, the GPS. I'm sure you
Yeah, we
know.
heard in India, right?
Yeah, so that's a lot of people don't like. I would never think that it would be banned or something like that. Well, like drones also. Drones can be problematic in certain places.
Yeah.
What? And you're creating content, so I feel like I've touched upon something with the drone. So what did you bring and what trouble did you have with the drone?
So that was a constant struggle, the drone, really. And we really asked ourselves, should we bring the drone into Iran? And I mean, I think many people have heard the stories of travelers, tourists getting jailed in Iran for whatever reason, like even if they're legit or not. I think a lot of the time they're probably not legit reasons, right? So bringing the drone to Iran was a concern, but then we ended up deciding, because there were no information that it's definitely forbidden. So we were thinking, okay, we can bring it, and then when they find it at the border and then they complain, then we can find a solution right at the border, right? And then we put the stuff through the scanner, and they didn't see like they didn't notice the drone. And then there we are in Iran with the drone, right? So I think we packed it really low somewhere in the bags, and we ended up using it only like 3 times in 3 months.
Also that was a decision. Okay, we just carried because it's a continuous journey. So if in Iran we don't use it, but in the next country we might use it. So it's we just want to have it with us. And so we decided that we wouldn't use it. Then we used it for
Somewhere in the desert and somewhere in the mountains, where you can't be sure that there's not a, you know, special facility where they're doing something shady. But like we were, like I was kind of confident, and nothing happened, so it went well. But of course, like in case that you get stopped by law enforcement in Iran, and they are for whatever reason, maybe you took a photo in a wrong place, and then they might search you, and then if they find the drone, you are in big trouble, right? So that was,
We were lucky. We can see that.
yeah. And I mean, yeah, we were careful, sort of, but of course, like it could have gone a different way. And then we were stuck with the drone, basically. And so to get out of Iran, we didn't get the visa for Turkmenistan. Like we went to the embassy in Armenia, and then like at the time they just didn't give any visa. So we ended up taking a boat to the Emirates, and then to fly flying over Turkmenistan from the Emirates to Uzbekistan. In the Emirates, you can bring a drone, but you cannot fly it. But in Uzbekistan, there are stories that people got their drones smashed on entry. from the border control. So I didn't want to bring the drone. We left it with a couchsurfing host in Abu Dhabi. And then we didn't have a drone in Uzbekistan, where they did not end up searching our stuff. Like we had our bikes and everything packed up in the massive boxes. And when we got them back, there was a sign that we should go to customs. There was a big red, sticker on the box. And then we showed up at customs and we were like, oh, now we need to take everything apart, blah, blah, blah. And they just looked at us and asked what's inside. That's our bicycles. We are traveling around the world with bicycles. And they're like, okay, just go.
Like, all
You
right,
know,
we've heard
but our drone was back in Abu Dhabi and
you.
it took us until Kyrgyzstan, I think, that
Yeah.
we found a person. Arif, actually, you found a person that flew from there to Abu Dhabi and then brought the drone back, and like it was a hassle.
Well, yeah. Traveling with a drone is not easy.
Yeah, it is a pain. I will send
Yeah.
you both a if you want a premium code for my app Drone Mate, which it tells you all the places you can and you can't fly a drone with all the permits, 24/7 support as well if you need to get a permit. So I'll send you that after the
Cool.
recording.
Thanks.
So you're filming along the way, you're creating content along the way. How did you plan out, like, okay, this is when we should film, or are you just taking a lot of footage? How were you with the content creation?
Yeah, right. So we are not professionals, so we are just filming randomly most of the time, just when. So we have a GoPro and a camera, and with the GoPro it's just like when we see something that we think could be interesting, we just start record. So we have a ton of footage. With the camera, it's more like, okay, this is so beautiful here, we should put the tripod, put the camera, make a nice shot. But we have, I think, 6 or 7 terabytes of footage now, and we sh don't shoot 4K, we shoot only
Wow.
1080p. So it's a lot, yeah. So editing is kind of a pain.
Yeah, I totally get it. And when you get to Korea is the last stop, what did that feel like? How, like, when you was there like a place that you were going to, like a specific place, or was it just when you got in the city, did the trip feel over?
No, so I'm half Korean, right? And so two things from my side. I think so when we started the trip, we asked ourselves the question, can we even do it? Right? And obviously a lot of our friends and family were like, oh, this is impossible, right? But for us, I think long before we reached Korea, there was no question that we can make it to Korea, that we can make it anywhere where we want, right? Like, because we went through this thousands of situations where there was sort of a problem, and then there was a solution as well. So I think weirdly, when we reached Korea, we took a ferry from China, and my biggest concern was that we might find Korea boring because it's a very developed country with cycling infrastructure and everything. And so that didn't happen. We just enjoyed it really much because for a change, it was just very, very relaxing. We didn't need to think ahead. It was just like, oh, a cycle and it's beautiful. And then if you're tired, there will be a pavilion, where we can put our tent inside. And it was so easy. That was
Food and toilet
fantastic. But
everywhere.
we had planned that my mother comes to visit us in Korea so we can visit our relatives with her. And Arif has never been to Korea, and that was obviously like a big goal that we do that, and that was fantastic. Like, we spent 2 weeks with my mom on the road. We rented a car and did a whole road trip, and it was the first time for her to really see all of the country as well, because she moved to Germany when she was just 17, alone. So when she visited back in Korea, she would just visit family. She never got to see the whole country, and that was great. And then we didn't want it to end the journey like that, like that we fly back from Korea. And so we continued into Japan, and then last minute we decided not to fly to Portugal, which we had intended to soften the landing in Germany, that we cycled back to Germany from Portugal. But I think 2 weeks before the flight, we're like, okay, maybe we go to Africa. So we checked what's possible, like how can we change the flight, and then we ended up changing the flight to Gambia on the West Africa coast, and that was
So we were not quite ready to end the journey when we reached Korea, but I guess for me, when we really reached Korea, I felt this, oh, we really did it. We are already in Korea. And I just, you know, when you go back and you remember the start of the journey where we were so unsure about everything, what was going to happen, and everything, what we would experience. And then suddenly we were in Korea with our bicycles. And I don't know, cycling around Seoul. Like, we just cycled here. I had this feeling we cycled to Korea, and it was amazing. I was a little bit sad that, oh, the journey is coming to the end. But also, yeah, very emotional about making it.
And you have all of this documented on YouTube and your website. So people can follow along. Are you still editing? I mean, are how far behind are you on the
Yeah, as Matthias told, we filmed a lot, and we have a lot of material to add, to work on, to edit. Right now, we started to edit the videos from Laos, and then Cambodia, Vietnam, so Asia. And yeah, we have a lot of work to do.
Or at least I reckon at least another year of editing.
But yeah, it was not so easy to travel and edit the videos at the same time, especially the way we wanted to create the videos, because I don't know how much of it you have watched already, or maybe you will still watch, but we kind of, the way we experience the countries, the way we experience people, we also wanted to transmit this through our videos. And so we decided not to make a typical vlog, travel log, but to create this experience and share it with people. So does take a lot of time and work, but
yeah, and I think it would be interesting to hear, like, from your perspective as a much more experienced content creator. Like, we feel like what we do is like a mix, like a hybrid between a vlog and a travel documentary. So at least that's what we're trying to do. And yeah, what do you think? Like,
yeah, I think it's a good strategy that you caught on early, which is don't let the content creation process interfere with the travel, because you can always in the edit, voiceover or whatever, but as you shouldn't let it take away from your experience that you're having at the moment. And I think having it be both informational but focus on the experience is a really good mix, because everybody comes to a travel video looking for something different. You know, it's really, really hard to, some people are really good at just being pure entertainment, some people are really good at being purely informational. I prefer things that are a mix of the two. And I think as when you're creating the content, that's a really, it fits more naturally if you're filming while traveling. In other words, I think it fits the style a little bit easier. So yeah, and I think you definitely came on to that good, really good thinking, because it doesn't feel like the content is forced, like the footage is forced, which then it just takes away, you know. I want to feel like I'm having your experience. I want to, like, I'm just watching, you know, on the side or something like that. So yeah.
And that's also one of the reasons why you film so much, because you know it's we are not planning, right? We don't have a storyline. Oh, okay, we film, take these shots and that shots, and so also this flexibility
Yeah.
we had.
But many times I thought it would be so great to have a third person, you know, walk behind us and film all this, because
That would be
there's so
awesome.
many situations where we couldn't, like, because maybe we were too tired or also mentally too exhausted, but that could have been amazing moments, you know, to capture. Or especially, I think, like, when we were fighting, to film this, like, between the two of you, when you see, oh, I tried it once, but I've realized that I just turned the camera on. She, the anger left, you know, multiplied immediately.
You don't film that moments, yeah.
Yeah, it's a
Yeah.
difficult balance. I mean, you know, I have it when I'm traveling, and, you know, let's say I'm going from somewhere to somewhere, I'm just walking somewhere, and I don't necessarily have my camera out, and then something really cool starts happening. It's really weird to take out your camera and be like, wait.
Yeah.
And I record. So,
Interrupt the moment, yeah.
yeah. So you just kind of get used to having your camera handy all the time because you never know when things can happen. But also, like, I feel like you guys have learned this a lot quicker than it took me, which is really the story happens in the edit. You know, it's not, you don't need to make the story as you're filming it. That's like, because then if you have a camera person with you, yeah, that's. Then it's very easy, but when you're filming yourself, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So what is what's next? What's the next adventure?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The next adventure, I guess, is
Well, we want to finish editing the videos. We actually need really some time to process everything what we've experienced during the past years, and we want to edit the videos
I want
and
to write a
write a
book.
book. Yeah. And then we'll see.
And in the
We have
meantime, we need to
ideas.
survive, but also, like, we are thinking about starting a family and stuff. So there's a lot of things that will happen in the coming years. But right now, like, I will focus on editing. Yeah, at least another 15 episodes of our amazing world bike tour, and yeah, write a book. Like, with all,
Just
you know, with
swapping.
all the things that we couldn't film on camera, because yeah, it wouldn't have been right probably also to turn the camera on. Like, there were many moments you will know, right? When you turn on the camera, it changes everything, at least for the other people that are there with you. Right, and that's what we're interested in to learn from the interactions with people. So a lot of the time we just, like, we looked at each other and figured out, do we film this or not? And actually, more often than not, we decided if we start filming this now, we did just totally destroy the moment. But still, there were so many memorable things that happened during these times, and I don't want them to get lost. So.
Yeah. I think you made the right decision to not ruin the moment. You know, with the camera. I always think those are the memories you're gonna remember later down, even if you don't catch them, which, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, that was great, but
Yeah.
you know, that can happen. Where are all the places that people can find you? Your site, YouTube,
Mainly on YouTube, Amazing World Bike Tour, and also a little bit on Instagram and what else?
Facebook, but that's
Facebook.
the same, right?
And
But right now we focus completely
on
on
YouTube.
YouTube.
Well, great. I will leave links to where everybody can find you and hopefully have you back on for your next adventure or when the book is ready. That would be great. I have so many more questions. I'm looking forward to the next episodes to see what's coming up, and the places you've been. It's fun to see places that you know, as a viewer, that I've been to at least the country, but then also places that I've never been to, which is a lot because I have not done a bike trip, so
Sure. Then I would have a question for you. If you have seen a video of us from one country that you visited yourself, did you have a different feeling or like, wow, I did have a completely different experience or feeling about this place than
Honestly, I'll give you the
usually?
boring answer, which is I really connected when you guys said people are so friendly and warm and welcoming and nice. I have found that especially in most of the world, places where, you know, like you are, for example, Laos is one place where people were just extremely friendly. Cambodia was like this. You know, I can think of just so many times where it's like, wow, you know, like I'm glad that it's not just me having those experiences. I think that's what I really liked was like, oh, this is just common, which makes me more optimistic about the world, you
Oh,
know.
absolutely, yeah.
So you're like, oh, so no, I can't say I had a you know, any very different experience. I think I'm happy to say that it's very common that people are just really friendly and outgoing and curious. You know, sometimes when I take out the camera, for example, and I have a camera in my hand, I'm worried that people are going to you know, I don't know, run away or be hostile toward me, but it's actually the opposite. People are very curious and want to come up to you and some people want to be on camera, actually a lot more than I would expect.
Yeah.
You know, there's always like that one person that you find in a place who's just great for the camera. There's always one, and you're like, ah, yes, you will help me in the edit because you're great for this particular video. So I look forward to seeing what's coming up. I'll share the links in the show notes and in the description box. Thank you very much for your time, both of you. And yeah, good luck with the edits and everything coming up.
Thank you. I know.
Thank you
Thank you
for
so much.
having us.
Thank you, Areva and Mateus, for joining the podcast. And thank all of you for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure that you subscribe to the channel and give this video a like. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, make sure that you give this episode a 5-star rating and a couple of nice words. It helps us get the word out about the show. Thank you all very much again. And until the next episode, I hope you have a great rest of your day.